The topic for tonight is back to the breath. Because that's what we do, right? When we sit and meditate, we come back to the breath again and again and again and again. And sometimes, not that much, sometimes more. Sometimes we don't have to come back to the breath because, miracle of miracles, we've stayed there for a while. But people who are new to this practice, brand new, have to learn this very simple thing. Watch your breath. Notice when you're not watching it. And once again, watch your breath. Just do it again. And again. And it's really simple, but it's hard. And there are many reasons why it's hard. And it is. It's not just you. It's not just them or me. It's hard. And right from the beginning of Buddhist practice, this has been recognized. That's why we know about these things called the hindrances. Desire, aversion, restlessness, being sapped of energy, sloth and torpor, and then doubt. And they've been with us right from the get-go. Another thing is, particularly, I don't know, maybe right from the beginning, but it seems like it's an epidemic now. We overthink it. I just taught, I don't know, the 12th time or something, the introduction to meditation online class. I mentor up to 20 people. About twice a year, sometimes more, sometimes just once. And I love it because it keeps me in touch with the newness of this practice. And every moment can be new. That's sort of what this practice is about. And Suzuki Roshi, the great Zen master who brought Zen to the West Coast and America. His famous book is Beginner's Mind, this element of newness that can be there with this art of coming back to the breath, just remembering to be here. But there's a range of problems with it, and it's not just beginners. It's not just people who are really new, but people who have been doing it for a long time. There are still problems that we have. And a big one is confusing the aim with the target. We aim at watching the breath. And it does not mean that there's this goal that we're going to stay there. It's simply not part of the package. If you stay there, that's fine. It's very pleasant. But it's not the goal. The aim is to keep coming back. Just develop this ability to come to a place of newness, of a fresh vision of the moment. So the point is to try and not to achieve what we often call watching the breath. It's not about staying there. That's concentration practice. to guide the attention to the breath over and over, and eventually it begins to stick. But it does take, I'd say, a minimum of a day. After doing a lot of concentration practice, there are times when I can get to where my attention is staying with the breath after half a day. But it takes a period of time for that to happen. And what happens for us in our daily sitting session, which for most people is less than an hour, it's mindfulness practice. And what mindfulness practice consists of is this returning to this fresh awareness of what's happening right now. So we're training the mind to come back to the moment and to have a larger awareness than the narrow focus that we have when we're busy, when we're rushing through the day. Now, there's a bit of an irony here, because concentration practice is that narrowing of the focus. And I'm saying that most of us go through our day with that narrow focus. But it's serial. Now I'm going to focus on this, now I'm going to focus on that. And there's this, you know, I've got to hurry, I don't have enough time, got other things to do, but I'm doing this now. It is not a mindful way to go. When we practice coming back to the breath over and over, we develop the ability, we're training the mind to be able to land on its feet again and again. No matter what's been happening, no matter how enthralling the thought was that took us away from the breath, no matter how urgent a deadline is that we're working on during the day, we have that ability to return to a fresh awareness of the present moment. So what this does is it lets us grow into what I like to think of as mindful living. And it takes a grounding of our attention in the body. And if you've been at the 20-some Dharma talks I've given about how important awareness of the body is, great. Because it's that important. In fact, in the Dhammapada, number 299, it says, "They awaken are always wide awake, those practitioners whose mindfulness, both day and night, is constantly immersed in the body." Awake, not in that encapsulated, deluded state of mind that's rushing from one deadline to another, but awake, right there, aware of whatever is really going on in the moment, not future tripping, not regretting something in the past, just right here with a fresh receptiveness to the real experience of life right now. This idea of having an awareness constantly immersed in the body can sound really strange to the American ear, or the European, or really global at this point. Our culture is going global. A lot of people in this rushing, busy world forget their bodies, just forget them. And it kind of think of the body as a transportation device. But mindfulness means fully inhabiting our experience. And all experience comes through the body. It comes through the senses. There is some experience that's manufactured by the mind. And in Buddhism, that's the sixth sense. But it's not here, and it's not now. It can be anywhere, anytime it wants. And it takes us away from what the Buddha referred to over and over as the truth of what really is. The body also resonates in response to experience. It's as if what's happened will echo in the body as emotion or thought. So we feel our experience. We feel it. It's the body that feels it. And so the body is always right here, right now. If it's an event that causes a thought, that causes an emotion, the body is going to have the feeling part of that emotion. And we often think of that as the kernel or the sine qua non of our experience, the way we feel about it. And yet, being divorced from the body, we don't even feel our feelings. I'll ask people in practice reviews, well, what does that thought feel like to you? And I'll get a story, or I'll get a comparison. Well, it's as if somebody hit a log with a big stick. Okay, but there's no log and there's no stick. How did your body feel? They don't know. Just aren't tuned into it. So it's in the body that the truth of our present experience exists. And of the four foundations of mindfulness, and I'm sure you've heard a lot about this over the years, it's sort of the spinal column of Vipassana. The body is number one. It's the first foundation. And this is a progressive thing. The way the Satipatthana Sutta sets it out, you start with the body. And where in the body do you start? You start with the breath. You start with the postures of the body, and the body walking, and the body breathing. So when I first started practicing, I hadn't even gotten to Vipassana yet. I was still in Zen. But I kind of got it, how important it was to be connected with the breath, with the body, and to keep coming back when I lost that connection. And I was lucky, in a backdoor kind of way, I was disabled. I couldn't work. And so I had the time to do the formal sitting meditation practice a lot, and also to do what I could do mindfully. And I made it a point that I would just keep coming back to the breath over and over during the day. So as I washed the dishes, come back to the breath over and over. Feel the dishes. Be aware of the somatic experience. And this has been really, really helpful as my practice has grown over the years. The breath, just to be clear, the breath, it's not a thing. You know, there is no breath. There isn't this thing that comes whooshing into the body. You know, that air comes into the body. But the breath is what we feel when we feel the body breathing. Okay? And it, the places where teachers for 2,500 years have directed students' attention is the chest, the chest swelling to let the air in, and then collapsing or, you know, shrinking, or the muscle in the belly, the diaphragm, pulling the air in and then pushing it back out. And finally, the places where the air enters the body. And this is a great location for developing concentration because it's hard. It's, that's where I go when I'm doing, you know, a day long or something, because it really challenges me. It keeps me on my toes, and that's what's required for concentration practice. And I find those really strong somatic locations, the chest, the lungs, or the belly, to be the easiest to get into when I'm doing a month long or something like that. Then that will be my location for most of the time, and I feel like I'm sinking into it. But there are other ways to stay in the body, and a big one in Zen is posture. In Zen, in case you don't know, there are these series of triangles. Your legs describe one, your arms describe another, your fingers are the third. Actually, I think your whole body is kind of a fourth. So getting into that posture and maintaining it keeps you alert, because most of us tend to kind of collapse forward or drift off to one side or do a little twisting, or the hands move. Or so paying attention to posture can be a wonderful mindfulness practice, especially as you go through the day. You have to, you know, go get to your desk, sit down, get up, run errands, go talk to people. You're always changing your posture. So if that's your locus of attention, it gives you something to work with. I can remember early on going to Dharma talks with teachers who said, pay attention to your left foot. Or just some, usually the extremities, because they, except for people who've been injured in them, they don't seem to have a heavy emotional load. Something that can be dispassionate, but that's always bringing you back to the body. And also, a good one for me, especially if I'm under stress, like if I'm teaching or my first time leading a retreat in prison, I was really tight. And I can remember that I realized I needed to pay attention to my stomach because it was just tightening up. And paying attention to it, very relaxing, helped the stomach relax, and my stress level came down. But a lot of people register their emotions in their jaw. So that's a good place to just keep coming back to that. Whatever works for you. What this will reveal, this mindful living that I'm talking about, is the third foundation of mindfulness, which is the mind. It's the stuff that goes on up in our minds. Thoughts, emotions, attitudes, assumptions, moods, all of those manufactured experiences that accumulate in the mind. And in the intro to meditation course, I notice over and over there's a big confusion about what's the difference between thinking and mindfulness of thought. And the difference is that you can be mindful of thought without getting swept away in it if you have that attention grounded in the body. So this is kind of the trick, is to do both. Pay attention to the body and have enough attention left over to notice what the mind is up to. So, yeah, I'm confessing it in front of you and the world. You're not just doing one or the other, you're doing both. And this is the art of coming back to the breath, coming back to an awareness, oh, I'm thinking. And as a result of what I was just thinking, I'm feeling really angry. Or I'm feeling like I really want to go get a candy bar or whatever. Notice I always turn toward chocolate in that moment. So it's a device that creates space. It's like when you go into the movie theater and the lights go out, and then the curtains open, and the screen lights up, and there's this sound all around you, and you get completely enveloped as the story unfolds. And that's how we live our lives. Completely enveloped. Until mindfulness comes in. And mindfulness gives us some space. It gives us a frame. It's as if there's still a little light left on the curtain surrounding that movie screen so that we can see, oh, this is a movie. I'm not really in a car chase. You know, I'm not really about to be shot by the bad guy. I'm sitting here and that's going on the screen. So we create that space by going back and forth between the experience, the body's response to the experience, back and forth, back and forth. Just noticing what the totality of our experience is. It's the external event and the response. And by staying grounded in the body, we're able to have that newness of that moment's experience. Now, in the introduction to meditation class, I hear over and over that people don't notice their emotions when they're meditating. And that's because when you sit down, you meditate, you develop enough concentration that there's a certain amount of serenity. There isn't a lot going on emotionally. And so, yeah, you know, you're going to look out the window and nothing's going to go by. There's a lot of emotion to observe in daily life, but it's very often so powerful, so enveloping and seductive that there's no space to observe it. So it's important to look when we sit in meditation, to take the practice that we get in daily life when we notice, oh, I'm angry or I'm nervous or whatever. That's that moment of mindfulness where there's fresh awareness. And as it happens over and over and over, we develop some we develop quite a bit of sensitivity, that in our meditation, we start picking up on our responses to the thoughts that come up. This is where the practice becomes transformative. In the split second in meditation, after we come back and realize we've been lost in thought, we have enough mental stability to investigate what our response was to the thought and whether it was suffering or not. Was this a mind state that leads to suffering, or a mind state that leads toward liberation? And we get to know ourselves. We get to know our own minds. And we get to know when one of these mind states starts that's going to lead to suffering, we can turn it aside. We have control. We're in the driver's seat. In this split second after we come back to the breath, what we can do in that moment is called divine investigation. And it will lead to the loosening of attachment to mental habits that cause suffering. And that's liberation. Thank you.